The Worm Ouroboros by E.R. Edison. Chapter 19. Thremnir's Huge. Of the Lord Spitfire's besieging of the witches in his own castle of Owlswick, and how he did battle against Corineus under Thremnir's Huge, and the men of Witchland won the day. Lord Spitfire sat in his pavilion before Owlswick in mickle discontent. A brazier of hot coals made a pleasant warmth within, and lights filled the rich tent with splendor. From without came the noise of rain steadily falling in the dark autumn night, splashing in the puddles, pattering on the silken roof. Zig sat by Spitfire on the bed, his hawk-like countenance shadowed with an unwonted look of care. His sword stood between his knees, point downward, on the floor. He tipped it gently with either hand, now to the left, now to the right, watching with pensive gaze the warm light shift and gleam in the ball of Balash ruby that made the pummel of the sword.
"Fell it out so accursedly?" said Spitfire. "All 10 thou saidst, on Ramrick strands?"
Zig nodded assent.
"Where was he that he saved them not?" said Spitfire. "Oh, it was vilely miscarried,"
Zig answered. "'Twas a swift and secret landing in the dark, a mile east of the harbor. Thou must not blame him unheard."
"What more remained to us?" said Spitfire.
"Content, I'll hear him. What ships remain to us is more to the purpose. 3 by North Sand's Ears, below Elmerstead, 5 on Throwwater, 2 by Lichness, 2 more at Auerwath, 6 by my direction on Stroparden Firth, 7 here on the beach."
"Besides 4 at the Firth Head in Westmark," said Zig, "and order is ta'en for more in the Isles."
20 and 9, said Spitfire, "and those in the Isles beside. And not one afloat, nor can be, ere spring. If Laxus smell them out, and take them as lightly as these he burned under Val's nose on Ramrick strands, we do but plough the desert building them." He rose to pace the tent.
"Thou must raise me new forces for to break into Owlswick. For heaven," he said, "this vexes me to the guts, to sit at mine own gate full 2 months like a beggar, whiles Corsus and those 2 cubs, his sons, drink themselves drunk within, and play at cockshies with my treasures."
"O' the wrong side of the wall," said Zig, "the master builder may judge the excellence of his own building."
Spitfire stood by the brazier, spreading his strong hands above the glow. After a time he spake more soberly. "It is not these few ships burnt in the north should trouble me, and indeed Laxus hath not 500 men to man his whole fleet withal. But he holdeth the sea, and ever since his putting out into the deep with 30 sail from Lookinghaven, I do expect fresh succours out of Witchland. 'Tis that maketh me champ still on the bit, till this hold be won again. For then were we free at least to meet their landing. But 'twere most unfit at this time of the year to carry on a siege in low and watery grounds, the enemy's army being on foot and unengaged. Wherefore this is my mind, O my friend, that thou go with haste over the stile, and fetch me supply of men. Leave force to ward our ships a-building, wheresoever they be, and a good force in Cruthering and thereabout, for I will not be found a false steward of his lady sister's safety. And in thine own house make sure. But these things being provided, sheer up the war arrow, and bring me out of the west 15 or 1800 men-at-arms, for I do think that by me and thee and such a head of men of Demonland as we shall then command, Owlswick gates may be brassed open, and Corsus plucked out of Owlswick like a whelk out of his shell."
Zig answered him, "I'll be gone at point of day."
Now they rose up and took their weapons and muffled themselves in their great campaigning cloaks and went forth with torchbearers to walk through the lines. As every night, ere he went to rest, it was Spitfire's wont to do, visiting his captains and setting the guard. The rain fell gentlier. The night was without a star. The wet sands gleamed with the lights of Owlswick Castle, and from the castle came, by fits, the sound of feasting heard above the wash and moan of the solemn, sleepless sea. When they had made all sure, and were come nigh again to Spitfire's tent, and Zig was upon saying good night, there rose up out of the shadow of the tent an ancient man, and came betwixt them into the glare of the torches. Shrivelled and wrinkled and bowed he seemed, as with extreme age. His hair and his beard hung down in elf locks adrip with rain. His mouth was toothless, his eyes like a dead fish's eyes. He touched Spitfire's cloak with his skinny hand, saying, in a voice like the night raven's,
"Spitfire, beware of Thremnir's heech!"
Spitfire said, "What have we here? And which way the devil came he into my camp?" But that aged man still held him by the cloak, saying,
"Spitfire, is not this thine house of Owlswick? And is it not the most strong and fair place that ever man saw in this country?"
"Filth, unhand me," said Spitfire, "else shall I presently thrust thee through with my sword, and send thee to the Tartarus of hell, where I doubt not the devils there too long await thee." But that aged man said again,
"Hot-stirring heads are too easily entrapped. Hold fast, Spitfire, to that which is thine, and beware of Thremnir's huge."
Now was Lord Spitfire woad angry, and because the old carle still held him by the cloak and would not let him go, plucked forth his sword, thinking to have stricken him about the head with the flat of the sword. But with that stroke went a gust of wind about them, so that the torch-flames were nigh blown out. And that was strange of a still windless night. And in that gust was the old man vanished away like a cloud passing in the night. Zig spake,
"The thin habit of spirits is beyond the force of weapons."
"Pish!" said Spitfire. "Was this a spirit? I hold it rather a simulacrum or illusion prepared for us by Witchland's cunning, to darken our counsel and shake our resolution." On the morrow, while yet sunrise was red, Lord Zig went down to the seashore to bathe in the great rock pools that face southward across the little bay of Owlswick. The salt air was fresh after the rain. The wind that had veered to the east blew in cold and pinching gusts. In a rift between slate-blue clouds, the low sun flamed blood-red. Far to the southeast, where the waters of Micklefirth open on the main, the low cliffs of Lookinghaven Ness loomed shadowy as a bank of cloud. Zig laid down his sword and spear and looked southeast across the firth. And behold, a ship in full sail rounding the Ness and steering northward on the larboard tack. And when he had put off his kirtle, he looked again, and behold, two more ships a-steering round the Ness, and sailing hard in the wake of the first. So he donned his kirtle again, and took his weapons, and by then were 15 sail a-steering up the firth in line ahead, dragons of war. So he fared hastily to Spitfire's tent, and found him yet abed, for sweet sleep yet nursed in her bosom impetuous Spitfire. His head was thrown back on the broidered pillow, displaying his strong shaven throat and chin. His fierce mouth, beneath his bristling fair mustachios, was relaxed in slumber, and his fierce eyes closed in slumber beneath their yellow bristling eyebrows. Zig took him by the foot and waked him, and told him all the matter. 15 ships, and every ship, as I might plainly see as they drew nigh, as full of men as there be eggs in a herring's row. So cometh our expectation to the berth." "And so," said Spitfire, leaping from the couch,
cometh Laxus again to Demonland, with fresh meat to glut our swords withal." He caught up his weapons and ran to a little knoll that stood above the beach over against Alswick Castle. And all the host ran to behold those dragons of war sail up the firth at dawn of day. "They dell sail," said Spitfire, "and put in for Scaramsey. 'Tis not for nothing I taught these witchlanders on the rapes of Brema. Laxus, since he witnessed that downthrow of their army, now accounteth islands more wholesomer than the mainland, well knowing we have nor sails nor wings to strike across the firth at him. Yet scarcely by skulking in the islands shall he break up the siege of Alswick." Zig said, "I would know where be his 15 other ships." "In 15 ships," said Spitfire, "it is not possible he beareth more than 1600 or 1700 men of war. Against so many, I am strong to-day, should they adventure a landing, to throw him into the sea and still contain Corsus if he make a sally. If more be added, I am the less secure. Therefore, occasion calleth but the louder for thy purposed faring to the west." So the Lord Zig called him out 12 men-at-arms and went a-horseback. By then were all the ships rowed ashore under the southern spit of Scaramsey, where is good anchorage for ships. They were there hidden from view, all save their masts that showed over the spit, so that the demons might observe naught of their disembarking. Spitfire rode with Zig 3 miles or 4, as far as the brow of the descent to the fords of Ethrywater, and there bade him farewell. "Lightning shall be slow to my hasting," said Zig, "till I be back again. Meantime I would have thee be not too scornfully unmindful of that old man."
"Chirking of sparrows," said Spitfire, "I have forgot his brabble."
Nevertheless, his glance shifted southward beyond Alswick to the great bluff of tree-hung precipice that stands like a sentinel above the meadows of Lower Tiverendar Dale, leaving but a narrow way betwixt its lowest crags and the sea. He laughed.
"Oh, my friend, I am yet a boy in thine eyes, it seemeth, albeit I am well nigh 29 years old."
"Laugh at me an thou wilt," said Zig. "Without this word said, I could not leave thee."
"Well," said Spitfire, "to lull thy fears, I'll not go a-bird's nesting on Thremnir's Huch till thou come back again."
Now, for a week or more was naught to tell of, save that Spitfire's army sat before Alswick, and they on the island sent ever and again 3 or 4 ships to land suddenly about Lookinghaven, or at the head of the firth, or south-away beyond Dreppaby, as far as the coastlands under Rimon Armon, harrying and burning. And as oft as force was gathered against them, they fared aboard again and sailed back to Scaramsey. In those days came Vol from the west with 100 men, and joined him with Spitfire. The 8th day of November the weather worsened, and clouds gathered from the west and south, till all the sky was a welter of huge, watery, leaden clouds, separated one from another by oily streaks of white. The wind grew fitful as the day wore. The sea was dark like dull iron. Rain began to fall in big drops. The mountains showed monstrous and shadowy, some dark inky blue, others in the west like walls and bastions of clotted mist against the hueless mist of heaven behind them. Evening closed with thunder and rain and lightning-torn banks of vapor. All night long the thunder roared in sullen intermission, and all night long new banks of thunderclouds swung together and parted and swung together again. And the light of the moon was abated, and no light seen save the Levenbrand, and the campfires before Alswick, and the light of revelry within. So that the demons camped before the castle were not ware of those 15 ships that put out from Scaramsey on that wild sea,
and landed 2 or 3 miles to the southward by the great bluff of Thremnir Sjucht. Nor were they ware at all of them that landed from the ships. 1500 or 1600 men-at-arms, with Hemming of Witchland and his young brother Cargo for their leaders. And the ships rowed back to Skaramsey through the loud storm and fury of the weather, all save one that foundered in Bothry Sound. But on the morn, when the tempest was abated, might all behold the putting forth of 14 ships of war from Skaramsey, every ship of them laden with men-at-arms. They had passage swiftly over the firth, and came aland 2 miles south of Owlswick. And the ships stood off again from the land, but the army marshalled for battle on the meads above Mingarn Hope. Now Lord Spitfire let draw up his men, and moved out southward from the lines before Owlswick. When they were come within some half-mile's distance of the Witchland army, so that they might see clearly their russet kirtles and their shields and body-armor of bronze, and the dull glint of their sword-blades and the heads of their spears, Vol, that rode by Spitfire, spake, and said, "Markest thou him, O Spitfire, that rideth back and forth before their battle, marshalling them?" So ever rode Corineus, and well mayst thou know him, even afar off, by his showiness and jaunting carriage. Yet see a great wonder now, for who ever heard tell of this young Hotspur giving back from the fight? And now, or ever we be gotten within spear-shot— "By the bright eye of day," cried Spitfire, "'tis so! Will he balk me quite of a battle? I'll loose a handful of horse upon them to delay their haste, ere they be flown beyond sight and finding." Therewith he gave command to his horsemen to ride forth upon the enemy. And they rode forth with Astar of Rhetrae, that was brother-in-law to Lord Zig, for their leader. But the Witchland horse met them by the shallows of Arran Pow, and held them in the shallows, while Corineus with his main army won across the river. And when the main body of demons were come up, and the passage forced, the Witchlanders were gotten clean away across the water-meadows, to the pass betwixt the shore and the steeps of Thremnir Sjucht. Then said Spitfire, "They stay not to form even in the narrow way twixt the sea and the huge, and that were their safety, if they had but the heart to turn and stand us." And he shouted with a great shout upon his men to charge the enemy, and suffer not a witch to outlive that slaughter. So the footmen caught hold of the stirrup-leathers of the horsemen, and running and riding they poured into the narrow pass. And ever was Spitfire foremost among his men, hewing to left and to right among the press, riding on that whelming battle-tide that seemed to bear him on to triumph. But now, on a sudden, was he, who with but 1200 men had so hotly followed 1500 into the straight passage under Thremnir Sjucht, made ware too late that he must have to do with 3000. Corineus, rallying his force and turning like a wolf in the pass, while Corin's sons, that had landed, as aforesaid, in the storm in the murk of night, swept down with their battalions from the wooded slopes behind the Sjucht, in such wise that Spitfire wist not sooner of any foreshadowing of disaster than of disaster's self, the thunder of the blow in flank and front and rear. Then befell great manslaying between the sea-cliffs and the sea. The demons, taken at that advantage, were like a man tripped in mid-stride by a rope across the way. By the sore onset of the witches, they were driven down into the shallows of the sea, and the spume of the sea was red with blood. And the Lord Corineus, now that he had done with feigned retreat, fared through the battle like a stream of unquenchable wildfire, that none might sustain his strokes that were about him. Now was Spitfire's horse slain under him with a spear-thrust, as, riding fetlock deep in the yielding sand, he rallied his men to fling back Hemming. But Bremery of Shaw's brought him another horse,
and so mightily went he forth against the witches, that the sons of Corund were fain to give back before his onslaught, and that wing of the Witchland army was pressed back against the broken ground below the Heuch. Yet was that of little avail, for Corineus brake through from the north, thrusting the demons with great slaughter back from the sea, so that they were penned betwixt him and Hemming. Therewith Spitfire turned with some picked companies against Corineus, and well it seemed for a while that a great force of the witches must be whelmed or drowned in the salt waves. And Corineus himself stood now in great peril of his life, for his horse was bogged in the soft sands, and might not wind free for all his plunging. In that nick of time came Spitfire through the store, with a band of demons about him, slaying as he came. He shouted with a terrible voice, "O Corineus, hateful to me and mine as are the gates of hell, now will I kill thee, and thy dead carcass shall fatten the sweet meads of Alswick." Corineus answered him, "Bloody Spitfire, last of three whelps, for thy brothers are by now dead and rotten, I shall give thee a choke pair." Therewith Spitfire shot a twirl spear at him. It missed the man, but smote the great horse in the shoulder, so that he plunged and fell in a heap, hurt to the death. But the Lord Corineus, lighting nimbly on his feet, caught Spitfire's horse by the bridle rein and smote it on the muzzle, even as he rode at him, so that the horse reared up and swerved. Spitfire made a great blow at him with an axe, but it came slantwise on the helmet ridge and glinted aside in air. Then Corineus thrust up under Spitfire's shield with his sword, and the point entered the big muscle of the arm near the armpit, and, glancing against the bone, tore up through the muscles of the shoulder. And that was a great wound. Nevertheless, Spitfire slacked not from the fight, but smote at him again, thinking to have hewn off his arm, the hand whereof still clutched the bridle rein. Corineus caught the axe on his shield, but his fingers loosed the rein, and almost he fell to earth under that mighty stroke, and the good bronze shield was dented and battered in. Now, with the loosing of the reins, was Spitfire's horse plunged forward, carrying him past Corineus toward the sea. But he turned and hailed him, crying, "Get thee a horse, for I count it unworthy to fight with thee bearing this advantage over thee, I a horseback and thou on foot." Corineus cried out, and answered, "Come down from thine horse, then, and meet me foot to foot. And know it, my pretty throstlecock, that I am king in Demonland, which dignity I hold of the King of Kings, Goreis of Witchland, mine only overlord. Meet it is that I show thee in combat singular, that vauntest thyself greatest among the rebels yet left alive in this my kingdom. How much greater is my might than thine?" "These be great and thumping words," said Spitfire. "I shall thrust them down thy throat again." Therewith he made as if to light down from his horse. But as he strove to light down, a mist went before his eyes, and he reeled in his saddle. His men rushed in betwixt him and Corineus, and the captain of his bodyguard bare him up, saying, "You are hurt, my lord. You must not fight no more with Corineus, for your highness is unmeet for fighting, and may not stand alone." So they that were about him bare up great Spitfire. And the melee that was stayed while those lords dealt together in single combat brake forth afresh in that place. But all the while had furious war swung and ravened below Thremnir's Heuch, and wondrous was the valour of the demons, for many hundred were slain or wounded to the death, and but a small force were they that yet remained to bear up the battle against the witches. Now those that were with Spitfire departed with him in the secretest manner that they could out of the fight, wrapping about him a watchet-coloured cloak to hide his shining armour. They staunched the blood that ran from the great wound in his shoulder, and bound it up carefully, and carried him a horseback, by Val's command, into Tremordale,
by secret mountain paths up to a desolate quarry east of Starry Gap, under the great scree chute that flanks the precipices of the south summit of Dena. A long time he lay there senseless, like to one dead. For many hurts had he taken in the unequal fight, and greatly was he bruised and battered. But worst of all was the sore hurt Corineus gave him ere they parted betwixt the limits of land and sea. And when night was fallen, and all the ways were darkened, came the Lord Vol with a few companions, utterly wearied, to that lonely quarry. The night was still and cloudless, and the maiden moon walked high heaven, blackening the shadows of the great peaks that were like shark's teeth against the night. Spitfire lay on a bed of ling and cloaks in the lee of a great boulder. Ghastly pale was his face in the silver moonlight. Vol leaned upon his spear, looking earnestly upon him. They asked him tidings, and Vol answered, "All is lost," and still looked upon Spitfire. They said, "My lord, we have staunched the blood and bound up the wound, but his lordship abideth yet senseless, and greatly we fear for his life, lest this great hurt yet prove his bane sore." Vol kneeled beside him on this cold sharp stones, and tended him as a mother might her sick child, applying to the wound leaves of black hoarhound and millefoil and other healing simples, and giving him to drink out of a flask of precious wine of Arshalmar, ripened for an age in the deep cellars below Crothering. So that, in a while, Spitfire opened his eyes and said, "Draw back the curtain of the bed, for 'tis many a day since I woke up in Owlswick. Or is it night indeed? How went the fight, then?" His eyes stared at the naked rocks and the naked sky beyond them. Then, with a great groan, he lifted himself on his right elbow. Vol put a strong arm about him, saying, "Drink the good wine and have patience. There be great doings toward." Spitfire stared round him a while, and then said violently, "Shall we be foxes and fugitive men, to dwell in holes of that hollow mountainside? So the bright day is done, huh? Then off with these trammels!" And he fell a-tearing at the bandage on his wounds. But Vol prevented him with strong hands, saying, "Bethink thee how on thee alone, O glorious Spitfire, and on thy wise heart and valiant soul that delighteth in furious war, resteth all our hope to ward off from our lady wives and dear children, and all our good land and fee, the fury of the men of Witchland, and to save alive the good name of Demonland. Let not thy proud heart be capable of despair." But Spitfire groaned and said, "Certain it was that woe and evil hap must be to Demonland until my kinsmen be gotten home again. And that day, I think, shall never dawn." And he cried, "Boasted he not that he is king in Demonland? And yet I had not my sword in his umbles. And thou thinkest I'll live in shame?" Therewithal he strove again to tear off the bandages, but Vol prevented him. And he raved and said, "Who was it forced me from the battle? 'Tis pity of his life to have abused me so. Better dead than run from Corineus like a beaten puppy. Let me go, false traitors! I will amend this. I will die fighting. Let me go back." Vol said, "Lift up thine eyes, great Spitfire, and behold the Lady Moon, how virgin-free she walketh the wide fields of heaven, and the glory of the stars of heaven, which in their multitudes attend her. And as little as earthly mists and storms do dim her, but though she be hid a while yet, when the tempest is abated and the sky swept bare of clouds, there she appeareth again in her steadfast course, mistress of tides and seasons,
and swayer of the fates of mortal men. Even such is the glory of sea-girt demon-land, and the glory of thine house, O Spitfire. And as little as commotions in the heavens should avail to remove these everlasting mountains, so little availeth disastrous war, though it be a great fight lost, as was today, to shake down our greatness, that are mightiest with the spear from of old, and able to make all earth bow to our glory. So said Vol. And the Lord Spitfire looked out across the mist-choked, sleeping valley, to the great rock-faces dim in the moonlight, and the lean peaks grand and silent beneath the moon. He spake not, whether for strengthlessness or as charmed to silence by the mighty influences of night and the mountain solitudes, and by Vol's voice speaking deep and quiet in his ear, like the voice of night herself calming earth-born tumults and despairs. After a time, Vol spake once more. Thy brethren shall come home again, doubt it not. But till then art thou our strength. Therefore have patience, heal thy wounds, and raise forces again. But shouldst thou in desperate madness destroy thy life, then were we shent indeed. End of chapter 19.